All right, so today's going to be a really exciting episode because I'm going to talk about what could be the future of the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. I will make some predictions about loan forgiveness more broadly for those of you that are not involved in this program, but I thought it would be kind of fun to talk about PSLF because it's always something that you see in the news and it's always something you see talked about. I think that we will see this program have a lot of changes over the coming years, so I thought it might as well talk about it. One thing that you'll notice on the site is we are building out more places for you to find good deals on financial products. So one thing that we're doing right now is doing the $500 bonus program for practice loans now. So if you go to the homepage and you scroll down, you'll see six different things you can click on. One of those things is going to be practice loans. And so those of you that are dentists, veterinarians, physicians especially, you can get a $500 bonus if you use one of our practice loan lenders. So I'm excited about that. Also working on a couple different products like a Dr. Mortgage page for those of you trying to buy a house. So we're still trying to do some work before the big restart of student loan payments and come up with things to talk about for the show. So by the way, if you have any ideas of things you'd like to hear me talk about, please send those too to our email. So talking about public service loan forgiveness, I want to make an analogy to electric vehicles. So let's pretend that you had a program that gives anybody an electric vehicle, you know, $100,000 as long as they've driven an electric vehicle for 10 years. Think about that for a second. You've got a lot of electric vehicles on the road today, a whole lot. Like seeing a Tesla is not that uncommon. I even see like a Nissan Leaf at the grocery store sometimes. My neighbor has a Chevy Volt. So you really see a whole lot of electric vehicles on the road today. What about, though, proving someone that had driven it 10 years? A lot of people have the right kind of vehicle today to get this hypothetical $100,000 benefit, but very, very few people had the right kind of vehicle 10 years ago to get this special benefit. Now, some people that have hybrids might make the argument, hey, my vehicle's electric. Well, sort of, but not really fully. And so that's kind of the analogy of those of you that are familiar with PSLF. That's kind of the analogy that kind of exists with this program, right? You've got a lot of people have the right kind of direct loans now, but very few people, because of the way the program was designed, had the right kind of loans 10 years ago. So remember, the direct loan program was really only an option for graduate students starting in 2010. And to get anything forgiven with public service loan forgiveness, you know, you need to have a payment that's 10% of your income that's less than your standard tenure plan. Well, if you're graduating with a $30,000 type balance from undergrad only, and you're coming out making $50,000 a year like most people do with, you know, your prototypical undergrad person with a degree, by definition, your income-based payment is probably going to be the same amount as the standard tenure plan. So you're going to pay that off in full over 10 years and not get anything forgiven. So the only people that really had direct loan access back before 2010 were undergraduates. And because undergraduates have very strict limits with what you can borrow on the Stafford Loan Program, very, very few people, if at all, if anybody, really qualified. And in fact, the only people that really would have had to have, you know, enough of credit on direct loans to qualify, you either basically had to make almost nothing, which, and be fully employed, which is kind of hard to do over 10 years, or you had to have done like a one-year master's degree in 2010, which those exist, but how many super expensive one-year master's degree programs are there out there? Not that many. Most of them are 2 years. So if you had the right kind of loans in 2010, you'd have to graduate maybe in 2 years, that's 2012, add 10 years, that's 2022. You can have consolidated the loans and got a direct consolidation loan, but the first people that did that were really the med school class of 2012. Those people started getting maybe the right kind of loans over time, 2008 to 2012. So, you know, those are some examples why so few people qualified 10 years ago with having the right kind of pure electric vehicle that they drove 10 years, right? To use that electric vehicle analogy again. Now, if you ask how many people will have driven an electric vehicle for 10 years, like 10 years from now, it's going to be exponentially larger, right? It's going to be way, way higher. Same thing is true for PSLF approvals. We're really seeing a whole bunch of people already get forgiven, and it's going to get more and more and more. And if you look at the reasons for why people get denied, it really kind of makes a lot of sense as to why it's happening the way it is. And it's also going to make sense about why you have not a lot to worry about. The most recent data, you know, and this is sort of why the media reports the way that it does, is from April 30th, 2021. So kind of what happened is, I mean, regardless of who controls Washington, like the way government programs run themselves are always a giant mess, right? I mean, if you look at like the tragedy unfolding in Afghanistan right now, one of the biggest problems was just bureaucracy that didn't approve like our Afghan allies for months or years at a time, right? And then suddenly we have to do it all in a couple weeks, and then government was just not built for that. So to use a less serious example, like public service loan forgiveness statistics, you know, April 30th, 2021 is the last time they put out a report. We're in September and they haven't released a report in several months. So you'd really have to ask yourself, do the people in the Department of Education, do they just sort of sit around all day and go to you know, lunch and not do very much work? I mean, you sure as heck have to wonder. I mean, same thing as to why they justified extending the payment and interest freeze till January. This past go-round, they sort of said, well, we don't have a plan in place. Well, it's like, well, you issued the freeze again, a nine-month freeze back in January, and you're just now admitting you don't have a plan in place? Well, the reason they don't have a plan in place is because, you know, the Biden administration did not get its key people in the chairs at the Department of Education until very recently. Why was that? Well, a lot of different reasons, but one of the reasons was one of the members of his own party, Senator Warren, held up the Undersecretary of Higher Education, I think his name is James Cavall, and kind of held his appointment up to get unspecified reforms in the student loan program. You know, that's obviously going to prevent an effective payment repayment start plan to take place. That's one thing that I'll point out is like when you're looking at government student loan reports, they're always late, they're always way behind, and you're always looking at data that's old. And so whenever you're saying, oh, X percent of people have been approved, well, that's kind of far back in time already. Let's look at the different form results, the latest form results of like what was processed, what was approved, what was incomplete, and why. So I'm reading these percentages out of 100%. So out of all of the recent submitted employer certification forms, 43% of them were straight up approved. Okay. Now that's not as bad as it sounds because 37% are still being processed. So this is like the recent batch of 300,000 forms that was submitted. Now, about 20% of them, so one in five of them, were rejected. So you might say, well, that's still pretty high. But one in five of them were rejected. Why were they rejected? In almost every case, it's because the folks submitting them did not use the PSLF help tool. So the PSLF help tool is this thing that matches the employer identification number with the full database of all the employers that any borrower has ever been approved for with the PSLF program. So at this point, they have tens of thousands of different employers that they have certified as being qualifying employers. And if you go to the studentaid.gov/PSLF site, you can look up the employers by EIN number to verify if the employer that's listed on your W-2, if you look them up by EIN, to see if they're already a qualifying employer for PSLF. Now, because this is a government bureaucratic program, what happens? People don't do that. They just submit it. They call FedLoan Servicing, and FedLoan is like not that helpful. And so people submit these incomplete forms, and so that's one problem. But, you know, just know that one of the big reasons forms don't get approved right now is not because of any kind of bad program design at this point. I mean, the main reason is just maybe folks kind of put the EIN number in incorrectly, or they put in a employer that isn't qualifying, right? I mean, if you are trying to qualify for forgiveness, you're going to go ahead and take a shot, even if you might be, you know, a marginally qualifying case. You might not qualify by the rules, but you might try anyway just to see, right? Now, I do think that also another reason is a lot of times employers forget to sign the forms. Borrowers forget to sign the forms. I know when I used to work at a financial institution, a huge percentage of the transaction requests had to be rejected simply because people forgot to sign the form, and you're not legally allowed to process it unless somebody signed it. You know, big mess, shouldn't be this way. I do want to say I do need to demonstrate more empathy for you folks that are going through this program because it is a mess. But I am pushing back on this narrative that PSLF program is broken and it has to be totally overhauled. We need this major reform. The PSLF program is for people that are recent graduates is working absolutely fine. It's really the folks back in the day that graduated that, you know, had the wrong kind of loans, and those people did get screwed over. So there could be a, you know, a change that would be really nice to see for those folks. But for, you know, anybody that's graduated after 2014, you're golden. Because if you graduated after 2014, for the most part, you're going to have the right kind of loans no matter what you did. You're going to have direct loans, and all you had to do was sign up for an income-driven plan. And as long as you were signed up for an income-driven plan and making payments, then you're going to be good to go. Now, there's some exceptions, obviously, but in general, most people after 2014 are doing fine. Well, what's 2014 plus 10? It's 2024. In 2024, guess what? That's the next presidential election. So that's one thing I'm going to say is I think it's going to be a pretty big campaign issue for reasons that I'm going to explain in a second. Now, why not make this process a whole lot easier? Why should there be such a hard time getting these approvals? Well, think about what would happen if Federal Loan Servicing gave out a lot of qualifying forgiveness to people that the program was not supposed to be giving that forgiveness to. So that would be a major mistake. They would get in a ton of trouble. Now, you could say that if you're pro student loan cancellation more broadly, then that would be kind of a good result, right? Like accidentally forgiving more loans than the program rules say you should. That might be a good thing if that's what your policy preference is, to have student loans canceled. It's kind of like why people argue for universal health care, right? Cutting out the insurance bureaucracy of approving or denying things might even just bring costs down. You know, if you look at what people got approved for PSLF, 97% of them used an income-driven repayment plan. So keep in mind, it was almost impossible to sign up for an income-driven repayment plan until 2009. That's when the loan servicers figured out how to offer income-based repayment. Almost nobody did the standard 10-year plan, even though that can count for PSLF too. Now, what about the reasons people did not qualify for PSLF? Let's talk about reasons people did not qualify for PSLF. So there's three main reasons. 82% of the people that didn't qualify had no direct loans. In other words, they had loans from before 2010. You could say that's a mistake for how Congress wrote the rules, and that's probably true, but it's sort of like saying, okay, in 2007, Congress wrote this bill and passed it late in 2007. The regulatory process was not finished until about 2009. 2009 is when this program got created. While you would hope that that would be done the right way, it's sort of like, you know, Medicare or Social Security. Like, if it was sort of passed, like, are you going to get full benefits the next year? I mean, possibly, right? But that's kind of like, you know, the program should have been written better, but it wasn't. But who is on PSLF? So 82%, again, of people that couldn't qualify didn't have direct loans. 14% did not have 120 months at a qualifying employer. 82% didn't have the right kind of loans. So the vast, vast majority of people getting denied are people that had loans that existed before the program was even created. I'm not saying that those people shouldn't have forgiveness. It's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is to say a program's broken when the vast majority of people that are not qualifying for PSLF right now had loans already existing when the program got passed. That's kind of not fully honest when people report that. So 14% said that they didn't have 120 months at a qualifying employer. In other words, people didn't have the full 10 years of credit yet. So 96% of people either didn't have 10 years at the qualifying employer or didn't have the right kind of loans. And the last major reason, 4% just used the wrong repayment plan. They signed up for the extended or the graduated, and they should have signed up for income-driven repayment. So the temporary expanded public service loan forgiveness program, that only helps out the 4% of people that used the wrong repayment plan, that had direct loans, that had 10 years at a qualifying employer. So that's why the TEPSLF program is a failure, because Congress did not want to put a lot of money behind it. And how do you pay for a program when you don't want to put a lot of money behind it and not make it sort of a rush to see who can apply first, like it was with the PPP program in the first round? Remember how all the really big businesses were the ones that got approved and everybody that was a smaller business kind of got left out? So how do you create a program that's not like that? Well, you make the eligibility rules super, super small. Same kind of thing with PSLF, right? How do you pass a bill that's really expensive and not have it have a big upfront cost? Defer the benefits past the 10 years for budgeting requirements. It's kind of messed up because, you know, I think it would be better for the country to actually have to honestly admit what certain things would cost and don't cost and everything. It's kind of like both parties do this, right? They like make programs where the benefits are like longer than 10 years into the future without paying for it, because the budgetary rules only require you to like look at the costs for the first 10 years. So that's kind of probably, in my view, like why something like the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program got passed in the first place is because they didn't look and see how expensive it was going to be because they didn't forecast, you know, more than 10 years into the future because of budgetary rules. This is the good news for people going for PSLF. There are a ton of people that are getting PSLF in the future. 1.25 million borrowers have already been certified. 1.25 million borrowers. That's $123 billion of outstanding student loans. And we know that graduate school borrowers, are disproportionately likely to get forgiveness, like the people listening to this podcast, because $1 in $2 of student loan debt now is from graduate school. So out of 1.6 or 1.7 trillion, about half of that, about 800 billion, would be from graduate school. And out of that, we would assume that graduate school borrowers would be probably disproportionately likely to work for nonprofits or the government, because the nonprofit or government sector tends to require higher education more than just any job in the economy overall, right? You could say maybe about a third of graduate school borrowers, I'm just pulling a number out of my hat, but might be qualifying. So you're at least at a quarter trillion that is eligible for PSLF, and that's just among graduate school borrowers. Undergraduate school borrowers could potentially benefit too, but you know the path is a lot harder because of the way the program's written. And that has implications for what kind of changes I think we'll see for PSLF that I'm going to talk about in a second. So only about 5,000 borrowers have received PSLF so far. Back when I first talked about this, it was only about 100. So we've gone from 100 to over 5,000 in about a year and a half. That's pretty good. That's exponential approvals, right? And so I think when we do this episode, maybe in another year and a half, that 5,000 will probably be more like 50,000 or even 100,000. So why do we think that the exponential approvals will be so high? Well, remember why people got denied. 82% of people that got denied just had the wrong kind of loans, FFEL loans. Take all those people getting denied and then take that issue away as those loans age and people had the right kind of loans just by default, right? So the class of 2014 for a four-year med school program is the first group that will have all those loans in the right status just by default. For law school, it's going to be the class of 2023. Because they started in 2010, graduated in 2013, 10 years of credit. For master's programs, two-year master's programs, that's 2022. And remember that the reporting is going to be lagged because of the nature of government statistics. They're generally old reports when they finally come out. If you add in all the folks, too, that are getting forgiveness with income-driven plans outside of PSLF, we're probably on track for half a trillion in student loan forgiveness already. So that's about a third of the total. So canceling 50,000 of student loan debt, if they did that, which I don't think they will for reasons I've talked about, but if they did, you know, that would really forgive probably 98% of student loans with a combination of existing programs, and if they did that. Now, the general bipartisan consensus over time has been that the middle class would pay for student loans or pay for school by taking out student loans, and the working class would get Pell Grants and mostly go for free. So having a disproportionate share of student loan forgiveness go to people with graduate degrees will cause political problems longer term. Where are Democratic politicians struggling at the ballot box right now? It's with lower educated voters. Now, you might say Republicans are struggling with educated voters, so Republicans might have an incentive to offer more kinds of student loan forgiveness programs to try to attract those voters. Democrats probably need to do more to attract like lower level educated voters. And I think that, you know, you can see the impact going up the stack on degree levels too. Bachelor's degree holders support Republicans more than graduate school degree holders. You know, high school voters support Republicans more than bachelor's degree holders. That's been kind of the political pattern, right, since 2016. Who knows if it holds, but so what is going to happen when you have a lot of this benefit at least flowing to the people with the highest levels of education. So that's kind of where I think we'll see PSLF change in the future, is you have two paths, right? One path is what I think would happen with the Democratic Party, which is let's just expand the program. Let's just expand PSLF. Let's just make it accessible to more people. So something like that would be, you know, you get 50% forgiveness over 5 years, or, you know, you get some sort of more generous program for people that are making more moderate incomes. Congress likes to talk about PSLF in the context of firefighters, nurses, and teachers. Why is that? It's because those three professions are very politically I guess you could call them attractive professions, right? In the sense that they are middle class, there's a lot of them, and people always think good things of firefighters, nurses, and teachers. People don't tend to not think of any of those professions as being quote-unquote greedy doctors. I'm sure you've heard that before if you're a physician or a dentist, right, or a greedy lawyer. Sometimes people have those unfair perceptions. So I think that that's one path, is just expand the programs, expand forgiveness. You know, I think that Republicans would be okay scaling back PSLF. They certainly want to scale back PSLF, but they might trade scaling back grad school benefits with expanding benefits for lower income or lower level educated voters, because that's more their base. It's hard to see Congress not capping borrowing limits at some point. Because if you think about the cost of this, how does this play out? The programs are going to keep getting more and more expensive. Schools are going to keep raising their tuition 5% every year. You're going to get more and more bad headlines outstanding about, you know, how much is being forgiven and how it's disproportionately for higher income people. You're going to see, you know, I bet you the Wall Street Journal at some point is going to do a story of some physician that's made $2 million on stock trading and day trading cryptocurrency, who owns a house in South Beach that drives a Tesla that got $500,000 forgiven via PSLF. I actually know a couple of physicians like that, but I'm not going to give their information, obviously, because it remains confidential. But eventually the Wall Street Journal is going to find somebody that they can profile, you know, or, you know, any kind of outlet that tends to lean against government programs or sort of be right of center in their news coverage, right? And you'll see more critical coverage of PSLF in the future, 100%. Like, you will absolutely see headlines that are going to be less than complimentary of public service loan forgiveness. There's no question about it. Same thing with taxable forgiveness in the 20-year kind of version of the pay-as-you-earn type program. You're going to see a lot more critical coverage. When is that going to happen? When there's a lot of people getting forgiveness and when it starts to become a problem with the budget. And that's not going to happen for a while. But when it does happen, probably in the next presidential election, say 2024, you're going to see a lot more people get forgiveness, and it's going to become a lot more apparent. And it's not going to just cause problems among partisans running for office. It's going to cause problems in the labor market, because you're going to have, you know, people working in small private practices in family medicine in rural areas that are getting $25,000 a year student loan forgiveness benefits that are going to have $400,000 of loans and not have them forgiven over, you know, over 10 years. And you're going to have orthopedic surgeons at like one of the really prestigious hospitals in Boston that are going to get all their stuff forgiven. And people are going to do stories and contrast those two cases. And it's going to make it so that doctors really want to work for nonprofit hospitals way more than they are, even are now. It's going to become a major recruiting problem for for-profits. And groups like HCA, you know, big for-profit healthcare chain, their leadership doesn't understand this right now. And when they find out that this is causing them a huge recruiting problem, they're going to put their lobbyists to work and cry foul. We'll see. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, right? Now, how does this play out politically? Let's assume Republicans in 2022 take either the House or the Senate. If that happened, then you probably just continue to see executive orders from the White House, at least until 2024, where you have maybe attempts at making PSLF more streamlined. Maybe you have more employers included. Maybe you have expanded forgiveness for people that have old FFEL loans that happen to be owned by the government. You know, you might have just whatever they can do via executive order, they'll try to do. If Democrats took the White House again, though, in 2024, then you might have some sort of like What You Can Do for Your Country Act, which was, you know, proposing expanding the kind of employers that could qualify, making a more generous sort of 5-year 50% forgiveness type of thing. You know, President Biden has talked about forgiving $10,000 a year for 5 years of service. That would be really popular for benefiting the teachers, firefighters, and nurses that the congressional supporters of PSLF are always talking about the program benefiting. And I do think that, you know, Congress is pretty smart. Eventually they're going to find out, and I don't think people follow PSLF like regularly, right? I think Congress members are mostly not that aware of it because it's a pretty niche issue. And when Congress people find out that it's not the people getting the benefit that they thought that they were giving it to, they will reform it, either to expand it, create a bigger tent, which is what the Democrats will want to do, or shrink the tent, or trade taking away benefits from graduate borrowers in exchange for giving them to lower-income people, which Republicans are probably going to want to do that. At some point, if Republicans get the White House and both houses of Congress, I think they will try to repeal it, but they already had that in 2017. They tried to repeal it, and they failed. Why did they fail? It's because they had bigger priorities. They wanted to pass a tax cut bill. They wanted to do other things like repeal the ACA, and it just wasn't a priority. In other words, student loan forgiveness has to get way more expensive for Republicans to really care. And it will over time, but it's not there yet, and it won't be there for a long time if you compare it to other things. Same thing for Democratic politicians. Like, why is student loan forgiveness getting left out of the conversation right now with the $3.5 trillion healthcare and education plan? You think if any time is the time to put in something about loan forgiveness, it's now, right? But the reason is because there's just other things politically that the Democrats want to do that they think are more politically palatable and that will get them reelected more, right? Universal pre-K, paid family leave. In other words, they cannot be seen to continue to care disproportionately about higher debt, more highly educated voters, because Democrats have already supported policies that protect that group. And their goal is to expand the tent and get some more benefits of a diverse nature for, you know, a coalition that they need to win, right? Both parties want to do this. And that's why I think that the loan forgiveness and loan cancellation really hasn't gone anywhere, in the sense of people have said, like Speaker Pelosi, the White House is not going to, can't use its authority to cancel student debt unilaterally. Therefore, the Congress has to do it if they did it at all. And then Congress has to pay for it. And Congress only has a certain amount of money with the overall price tag they can get moderates on board for. And who are the moderates? Senator Joe Manchin from one of the least educated states in the country. Is he going to go to the mat for something that's $300 billion out of a $3 trillion bill for student loan cancellation when his voters are typically working class? He's not going to support that. So, I mean, maybe you have an expanded Democratic majority in 2022. That's possible, in which case we might see some legislative movement on public service loan forgiveness. But probably, if you look at historical trends, the party out of power usually gains seats. And with the 2020 census, Republicans have even more of an advantage from a, you know, political map perspective. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with PS Left, because we know that programs that benefit highly educated voters are really hard to kill because they're very popular. Programs where people disproportionately vote, that benefit people that disproportionately vote, those programs are hard to kill. Medicare, Social Security, two of the most expensive programs we have by far. Why have they not changed significantly? It's because old people disproportionately vote, and nobody wants to mess with older voters because older voters are often swing voters in a lot of elections. We'll just have to see. The Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program is here to stay. It's not going anywhere for people that are already going for it. It's a program that, if I had to just guess right now, gun to my head, what do I think is going to happen with PSLF? I think that eventually it gets expanded to more people. Some of the most extreme parts get curtailed a little bit. You might see a limit, or PSLF will only forgive up to $200,000 at some point for people that are not yet in school. I think that that limit would never apply to people that are already, that already have loans or are already enrolled in a program. But I think that at some point, you probably do a little horse trading. At some point, you look at this bill and you say, wow, this is very expensive. Are we going to change it? Now, on the flip side, you know, this program is not that expensive compared to Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. It's a fraction of those. I think, though, from a political bang for your buck, you probably get less political benefit from a program like PSLF that you could spend that dollar in a way that politically benefits you more elsewhere. And how do you do that? Well, if you cap forgiveness for no more than $200,000, you know, that doesn't hurt that many individuals compared to if you eliminated the program completely. So for example, if you could cap the forgiveness, and I'm saying in the future, not for current borrowers, but if you could cap the forgiveness for people making, for people that would have more than $200,000 forgiven, and take all that money and throw it at a benefit for people that get $10,000 a year over 5 years forgiven, like nurses and firefighters and teachers, that would get you a lot more political bonus points if people knew about that kind of a program. So we'll see. I think that we're going to see a lot more automated approvals of things, automated processing, just more automated processes just in general. That's what we're seeing more with the disability discharge that just came out, the change in that program where they used to have you submit income verification for 3 years to prove that you're still making a low income. Now they just do it automatically when the Social Security or VA deem you disabled permanently. I think we'll see more stuff like that. I think you'll start seeing efforts getting people to, you know, automatically get certified for PSLF. For example, you could sort of ask employers to sort of maybe work with the Department of Education, you know, and maybe ask employees to sign some sort of document that allows them to automatically share information about their employment with the Department of Education to make it so that people don't even have to apply necessarily. And I think we're going to continue to see more and more people signing up for income-driven repayment. The number of people on income-driven repayment just soars every time data comes out. We're going to see more and more people get that way over time. And I think, you know, the schools know this. The schools are going to continue to take advantage, and it's going to, you know, by the time I think Congress really figures out what it did, you know, it's probably going to be something that becomes kind of like the healthcare industry, where these schools will employ so many people and in so many different districts, and the schools will have so many lobbyists that, you know, program might not go anywhere ever. These are just some things to think about, but just if you ever get worried about PSLF, just remember one key number, 1.25 million. That is the number of borrowers that is already, you know, approved for PSLF. And that's just the number that has taken the time to send in the verification forms and gotten certified. That's the most active borrowers that really are paying attention. Out of the 42 million people that have student loans, there are far more people out there that do qualify for PSLF that just haven't taken the time to send in those forms yet. So eventually when that happens, that number is going to continue to tick up, and we're going to just see a cascade of forgiveness, which is going to be great for borrowers. And it's going to be a little shocking to people running the budget numbers for Congress because they didn't plan for this. And that is going to influence the future of PSLF more than anything. But the good news is it won't happen for a long time. So if you're going for PSLF, definitely do it. But remember that PSLF is never worth it compared to actually just taking the job that you would take anyways and then choosing the loan strategy that most closely matches the job that you would have taken if student loans weren't even in the picture. So I've done thousands of consults. I've never seen one where PSLF was so important that you absolutely had to work in a nonprofit or government employer or else you were totally screwed for the rest of your life. That doesn't really happen thanks to the 20-year version of loan forgiveness that you can get your loans forgiven in the private sector after 20 years of payments. So think about it like if you're paying 10% of your income, you're doing it for 10 years versus 20 years. People live in California. California is 10% of your income, and that's permanent, not just for 10 or 20 years. Why do people live in California? Because it's really nice, and it's really great weather, and got a lot of good entertainment options, and it's a really happening place, right? That's why people live there, maybe instead of, say, Nevada, where, I don't know, maybe it's not as interesting. You know, hopefully people from Nevada don't pie me in the face. But, you know, remember that student loans at their very worst are an income tax. For their at the very best, you're making so much money that an income tax is really unattractive. Like having your student loans be 10% of your income is a terrible idea if you are making a ton of money, because you'd like to have more control over how much you pay, and you'd like to get a better interest rate. And I will say right now, I'm seeing incredibly low interest rates. People across the board are getting just the lowest rates that I've ever seen in 5 years of doing this. I had somebody ask me the other day, like, what should I expect for like a 20-year fixed rate? Like 4.5? And I was like, well, how about 2.75? Because that's some of the rates that people are actually getting, which is nuts. That's more for like dentist orthodontists, 20-year fixed, 2.75 through our site. Probably more regular type employment, like non-healthcare sector, maybe more like 3.5 for 20-year fixed. I mean, I don't know. I've just never seen like low threes or high twos for 20-year fixed rates in my 5 years of doing this. 2 years ago, 20-year fixed was 5%. So now it's 2.75 to 3 point something. That's nuts. So, you know, studentloanplanner.com/refi, that's the page to search to see if you could get one of those deals. So studentloanplanner.com/refi, check that out if you are trying to get a low interest rate and lock something in now. From what I can see on our site, Common Bond is still doing that 20-year 0% APR for 6 months. If you do the 20-year fixed rate, there's nothing stopping you from refinancing after the 6 months of 0% to another place. Maybe they'll get in trouble. You know, I'll get in trouble for saying that, but that's just what the terms and conditions of the loan are. And we give people that are refinancing six figures, generally we give you $1,000 or more in cash bonuses when you apply through our site. So definitely check that out. And also, it's kind of like getting contractor work done in your house. It's like really difficult to get people. Right now, we're more available than that because, you know, obviously student loans are suspended until January 31st, right? But what's going to happen is people aren't going to think about this until like right before the holidays. Like people will start thinking about other stuff and then the holidays will happen. And then I would think what's going to happen is people are going to be like, oh, shoot, you know, I better get something on the calendar. And then all of January is going to book up. And then we're not going to be able to help you in time when the payments start again, right? So we are seeing a lot of people kind of anticipating that, booking in October, booking in November. You can generally book 60 days from today. And so if you are planning on getting a plan, you're going to start getting more and more emails and correspondence from your loan servicer and also people at Fed Loan Servicing. You definitely need to have a good game plan for how you're going to get all your certification done correctly and all of your appeals and your payment counts done correctly before they get transitioned to your new servicer come December. So just a thought there that if you're on the fence, you could schedule 60 days out for some time in November just as a placeholder, and then you can move it if you needed to later. And you can do that at studentloanplanner.com/help. And then finally, if you want to ask a question for today's podcast and make it a lot spicier and fun for me, leave one, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. I'll really enjoy getting your question and featuring them in a future podcast episode. Thank you so much, everybody. I hope you had a great Labor Day weekend. Back to the school year, right? So if you have kids in school right now, you know, just this too shall pass, right? Have a great week. And until next time, I'm Travis from Student Loan Planner. Thank you for listening.